Hi everyone. Welcome to module 5, our second call. After today's call, we'll have a 2-week break for summer. Those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, those of us who are living in England and are still wearing cardigans may be wondering what the point of this break is. But the idea is that you have a bit of a chance to integrate. We're going to be halfway through the program after module 5, and the idea is that you get a little bit of a break because most people are kind of traveling at this time. What I would say is these first 5 modules, and in particular modules 4 and 5, are ideal if you are a bit of a quick start, if you like to get out there and start stuff and practice and not wait, then this is these 2 modules in particular, 4 and 5, around understanding and helping clients to uncover those root causes, those protective beliefs and what's behind that, and then moving them into finding more helpful beliefs and then experimenting with those. That's ideal for a single session offer in your business. I really want you to start thinking about how do you get some return on your investment here. So if you are looking for an experiment to play with, which we'll be talking more about today, then creating an offer, even if that's just something you offer over the summer for the next few months, just to get the opportunity to play with these tools, I highly recommend it. There's one thing one suggestion I would offer is, kind of don't wait. Like, I know all of us have our ideas about waiting until we've got the whole methodology down. Maybe that's you. Colette's waving at me here. But really, you don't need to wait. And that's one of the reasons why I really love working with coaches who already have some experience, already have some foundational training, is that you can incorporate this into your existing offering. It's hopefully going to be pretty seamless. And you may have seen last week's call, the email contained a guide for how to set up and market a single session offer. So really do take this and run with it. I think it's the perfect thing to start using this work in your practice. Right, so on to today. Let me share my screen with you. Where are we? Zoom's doing weird things to me. Okay, here we go. So today we're just going to revisit like the whole point of module 5, why we're doing this and what it's all about, just to remind everyone. I know I need to hear things about 47 times. And we're going to move, we'll take what we talked about last week around the kind of belief busting aspect of this work and moving that into the client's lived experience. Like, how do you take a protective belief and then change it to a more helpful one, but then start taking action from that more helpful belief? How do we get our clients to do that? And that is through experimentation, spoiler alert. And we're going to talk about how to do that today. Okay. I've also got some suggestions for things you can take to your pods and just in preparing for the next few modules. But yeah, that's what we're going to be doing today. Okay, so aims of module 5, let's revisit that just briefly. So remember, the whole point of this particular module and module 4 as well is to help our clients to get out of this loop as quickly as possible and as regulated and resourced as possible, right? So it's not like get out of it. It's more of I've got some choices here. I can move out of this. The earlier that the client can interrupt the story that something is risky and the only option they have is to hold themselves back, the quicker they leave that loop, and they create, if they can move into a more helpful belief, the quicker they can create new evidence that other options are possible. That's how we kind of sustainably change beliefs. We've got to create new evidence for our bodies to metabolize that say, oh, there is other options here, right? What you'll notice, and you may have found this, is that as you start to play with protective beliefs, particularly your own, you get to know them quite well, and you get to know what are the risks that you are holding back from. It's when you can start experimenting with those beliefs, that's when you start really making some real shifts. Yeah. So I just want to pause here and just check in with everyone around if anyone has been playing with busting beliefs and how that has gone, what you've found just in looking at those beliefs yourself, if you've been working with clients, like, let's just have a little check-in and see how everyone is finding that kind of process. Anyone want to share? Anyone at all been using the Belief Buster at all? Yeah, Colette.
Hi, I haven't actually done it with clients yet. I'm just a little bit before that. We're still working on the map and the protective beliefs. Oh. But we did do it. I did it with Irina in our practice pod. And the one thing that came up for me is like that it felt a bit crunchy doing it the first time. But also there was that overlap of therapy, you know, because I'm a therapist. So it's like, oh my God, I really had to like boundary myself and like it. But that, I think that was because I was in the practice pod, because in my practice, I probably would flow between the two. Does that make mm-hmm. sense? Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that's kind of okay.
Yeah, of course.
And I sort of brought mindfulness in and stuff like that. And it's just like, you know, we can take this and then add other things around it, can't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I love about the Belief Buster is that this works in lots of different contexts, right? So, and it's rooted in, you know, really sound practice of, particularly of rational emotional behavioral therapy, but also if you've ever come across any cognitive behavioral therapy, or any kind of cognitive coaching, there'll be a version of this that you may have seen before. What I have found though, is that in refining this and tweaking this, particularly around the language of desired emotions, likely outcomes, probable, possible behaviors, that is designed to not activate that protector, that survivor self. That language is very intentional because it's designed to help the client feel into, you know, what other options they have in terms of what they want to believe. For a lot of clients, the idea that they don't have to believe everything they think is, I know that for me was like, what is this magic? So what I would recommend as you're trying this out, as you're playing with it, is to get used to using that language. And Jane even mentioned this morning, you know, whenever someone has said to her, even in her like foundational coaching practice around reframing beliefs, she's like, oh, my heckles go up, you know? And that I think is a really natural resistance. We want to keep our protective beliefs because they feel safe to us. And so as we're coaching our clients, we want to respect that and offer them, well, here's another belief that's equally true. And you're in choice. You get to decide what you want to play with. So rather than that, what I found was quite, it was almost a kind of condescension was the kind of, I think that's the word I would say was true for me. When I was learning those cognitive approaches, it was like, well, clearly we're believing a stupid thought, you know, something that is unhelpful and obviously not going to get you where you want to go. And so there is this kind of like smugness sometimes that we can bring to that, right? Even for ourselves, we can judge it. It's illogical. But when we are looking at this through the lens of self-protection, it's like, well, of course, we'll believe any old thing if it keeps us safe, right? And so learning to work with the protector of the client, respecting that the protector has an important job to keep the client safe, but also to bring in that healthy adult self. That's why I really recommend playing with this language and getting used to framing it in this way, framing this tool in this way. Because when you start, and you'll feel it, when you start, find yourself in the room with the client's protector and you feel like you're in a battle and you're having an argument over what is the right belief, right? It's like, it's because the protector is resisting this because they feel at risk, right? Does that make sense to you, Colette?
Yeah, it does. And actually, going back a bit, I was working with a young person. I mean, she's an adult, she's 19, but talking about her protector, and we talked about, you know, how does she feel, you know, how does her healthy adult self, because we've done a lot of work. And it just kind of, it suddenly just brought back this, I need to go back and heal my child. So it opened up that door to kind of go back.
Yeah.
So it's like through the coaching, we can still go back and repair something and then come back.
Yeah.
So that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Yeah, completely. And you're absolutely right. When you get comfortable with this and the language starts to feel a bit more comfortable, then add in your, make it your own. It's that thing of like kind of learn the rules and then you can break them when you feel really good about it, you know? But getting to know this, it's like just understand that this is a kind of recipe for helping folks with self-doubt access their healthy adult self in the session with you, because we're not activating their protector, or we're doing our very best to minimize the chance of activating that protector. Excuse me. Anyone else want to offer how they've been going with these tools, or what's been coming up for you? Just want to check in around that. Yeah, Tina.
I guess, and it's connected maybe to Colette and that idea, the idea of like maybe not shaming the doubts, but I've noticed some of my doubts, I'm like, there's truth in that. Like, this is not me having inner critic. Like, I see the truth. I see where I made a mistake that led to this. And then even more than that, I'm seeing like the protective actions I do, they work. They work really well. Yeah. You know, so that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing to remember, right? Is all our clients' self-doubt and all of the behaviors and the beliefs they have, all that tells us about them is that they found really great ways to keep themselves safe.
Yeah. And they work, they function.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, there are risks. There are absolutely risks. And we don't want to in any way invalidate the risk that the client's feeling. What we want to do is say, and there are other options. There are other things that are also true, and you are in choice. And when you feel that courage to give it a go, then this is how we'll do that. Yeah. Yeah. And I think if a client is seeking out coaching, that tells me that they're pretty ready to make some changes, right? And sometimes we need to say, hey, remember when you said you really wanted to make some changes? This is how we're doing it, right? This is what it looks like. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, Vicky.
I just wanted to add what I found really helpful last week was that kind of light playfulness around you can keep this if you want, you know, it's doing a really great job. And I used that with a client and like, she just laughed and was like, absolutely not. I'm like, okay, like So should we have a look at, it was just a really nice lightness of touch to be able to then pivot into what else could we be thinking instead, and how else can we take on board a different way of thinking. And she took great action. She kind of dropped a contract that she had been holding her back and things straight away. It was really nice. I really appreciated that way of going, this is doing a really great job, do you want to keep it?
Yeah. I think I love that you said that, because I think that there is so much shame and guilt and judgment and all that shit gets heaped on top of the thing that isn't working by the client, by us. And when we can offer the client, well, look, it's doing a really good job. You are absolutely keeping yourself safe. And I don't want to take that away from you. But if you want to try something else, here's some ways we can do that. Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Yeah, Angela.
Along those same lines, you said the word, this is a very sophisticated belief. And so I really stuck with that. And so I used it on I can't remember the name of the tool, but the four columns where you come up with the protective belief.
Yeah, the tool. Uncovering the protective belief. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that one. So I did it with a group. And there were two things that just really landed with the group. One is acknowledging just how brilliant they are, of like, your brilliant brain and body and nervous system created this. And so rather than thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so stupid, or when am I going to figure this out? It's like, what if we just acknowledge just how, like, the pure brilliance of this? And so that just started loose. I could notice it started loosening up the shame around it. And then it created some lightness and an opening of what else is available here? What else could be true here? There's that. And then the other piece that I mentioned is sometimes, like, the things they're doing instead, I did acknowledge, I said, and for any of us who have neurodivergent brains, this may be a dopamine something happening. And so to not just be beating yourself up, but also acknowledging that your brilliant brain sometimes needs additional support with getting interested in some of the things that feel boring, you know? And so that was, I tend to work with a lot of neurodivergent folks as well. And so that was helpful, that it's not always just a belief, that there's a brain chemistry that's mixed in with it. So those two things just felt like they really landed. So super happy to be able to use the tool yesterday with a group.
Love that. I love that you use it with a group as well. Like, you and Vicky are like our vanguards taking this work into the world. It's brilliant. Yeah. And I'm curious to know, Angela, in working with a group, how did you find that just managing, because everybody's kind of going at their own pace? So I'm just wonder if you maybe want to just take a moment to share so folks can know. I know Vicky said she's going to try this too.
Yeah, so this group has been meeting for a few months. There's already some camaraderie. There's already some intimacy with the group. And so they were really eager to practice the tool. And we did the tool, and then we did marketing planning, because we uncovered, like, what might be stopping you from taking action on your marketing plan? So it worked really well as far as a segue. So I would ask the question, I gave some examples, and then I gave them like 2 to 3 minutes to fill in their answers. And then I asked for people to share, if they wanted to, some examples. So we just use examples from the group to lead people through the exercise. So
magic. I found that too, that when you can get people sharing, it's like that also dilutes the sense of shame and guilt. It's like, oh, not just me then, you know? And when we can bring in a little bit of lightness and humor into it, it just really dissolves that very quickly. So yeah, I'm super glad you had that experience.
Yeah, the theme of Ted Lasso came in, of like, what are we doing instead? We're watching Ted Lasso, you know? And so it did, it helped people feel not alone. And again, just really recognizing this is a really brilliant strategy. And to be honest with ourselves from that place of compassion of, but is it really working? Yeah. Like, is it really working?
Where you want to be.
What I want. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Thank you, folks, for sharing. I think this is, you know, for anyone who's sort of maybe holding back or waiting for the perfect moment, just know that, you know, you can give this a go, play with it. The practice of doing this work is, I think, where the confidence builds, right? I used to get asked all the time, you know, especially on podcasts and things like that, just give me three tips for feeling more confident. And for me, it is a process, right? We need to have some clarity over what it is that we want and maybe what's holding us back. But we also need to have the courage to try new things and to even contemplate new beliefs. And it's through that we get to build some competence, right? There's a C theme here. But through the clarity and the courage, you get the competence. And it's once you've been doing something for a while and you're like, oh, I can do this now. I can do my marketing plan, right? I am taking action because I'm recognizing where I'm holding myself back. That's where the confidence comes, right? So we will often wait until we feel confident before we try the new thing. But actually, it happens the other way around. The confidence comes when you've tried the new thing. And that is what takes the bit of bravery to get going. So my hope is that as you play with this process and these tools, you start to see this can often be the difference between a client who's sort of stays stuck and holding themselves back and having the courage to try a new thing, to try just one small action that's a little bit different. That will often be the gateway. Yeah. Cool. So remember that the reasons we're doing this, and I just want to come back to these slides. The reasons we're doing this is because we are in the business of helping our clients thicken the narrative, right? Self-doubt stories tend to be quite thin. They tend to be a bit absolute, usually based on all or nothing thinking or how we're feeling in the moment, right? And so when we can get the client to just pause and look at this from a place of feeling quite regulated and resourceful, we introduce more possibility, more nuance, more complexity. The narrative, the story gets thickened, and that's what brings this stuff to life, right? That's what helps our clients to see, oh, other things are possible, right? So one of the things I want us to get a little bit obsessed about collectively and individually is our clients' self-doubt stories, right? So your clients, the folks that you want to help, and it may be that you're figuring that out. It could be that you're maybe pivoting your practice a little bit, or maybe you're really clear, or maybe you're a little unclear. But the thin stories that your clients share, the more you can get super interested in that, the more it's going to be easier for you to not only help those folks, but to help them make the decision to coach with you. So market this work, right? So one of the things I just want to share with you is this exercise. We're going to do this now together. But I used to do this all the time. And it's really about getting super interested in what my clients are telling me and the kind of educated assumptions I'm making about where they're at before they coach with me, right? So I'm just going to share this really simple model here. Where are my clients at? What are they believing? How are they feeling? What are they doing and not doing? What are they saying and not saying to themselves, to other people, right? This kind of map or way into our clients' world, I used to have four big A3 size sheets of paper up on my office wall, and I just kept adding to this. It helped me to build a really clear picture about where my clients were at and to talk to them in the words that they use. So I know most of us have probably, made up a client avatar, right? A kind of straw person of who we would ideally like to coach with. The issue with an ideal client is that we work with humans, and that's never ideal, right? So what I found is it's actually really powerful to use our clients' language in helping to speak to them and helping them make the choice about whether they want to coach with us. So I wanted to offer this just as a 5-minute exercise. I want you to just jot down, just create this on a piece of paper and just jot down, what do you already know about the folks you want to work with? Or it might be the folks you want to work with, and it may be the kinds of challenges you like to help people solve, right? So it may be from that angle. But what are you, before they're working with you, what are their beliefs? What do they believe? What are their protective beliefs? How does that make them feel? What can they do or not do as a result? And what do they say or not say as a result? So we're just going to spend 5 minutes. I want you to get some raw material on the page. And that's going to guide us as we move through this, this call. Notice, what do you think your clients are believing about themselves, other people, the world? How are they speaking to themselves? What are they telling themselves about what's possible? Once you've got some ideas on the page, I just want you to notice, what, if any, of these beliefs do you share, right? What also comes up for you? Okay, so just come back to the room, and I'm just interested if anyone wants to kind of share what are the beliefs that you recognize that your clients have that you have. Does anyone want to share any of those? Are you the only coaches in the history of the universe that don't share any beliefs with your clients? Yeah, Tina, thank you.
I guess I will. Just the I don't fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I do share, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. That's a big one. Yeah, I know for me, the one that used to come up a lot, much less so lately, is I need to do more. I'm not doing enough, and I'm not enough. You know, is by a byproduct of that. Less so these days, but yeah. Why am I not further ahead? Yeah. I see you, Angela. Yeah. Yeah, big one. Yeah. Yeah, Adrian.
This one actually came up in my practice pod, and it's anything less than 100% success is failure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a good all or nothing one, right? Yeah.
And when I uncovered it, I was like, oh, I'm shocked that a part of me believes that, but
yeah,
there it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kelly, I saw your hand peek up.
Yeah, the one I've got, there's a few actually, but I struggle socially, which is sort of half true, and I don't feel at home away from home, which is definitely true.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've long-standing belief, I am awkward.
Yeah.
In social settings. I just feel like I can usually read the room, but I still feel like awkward. Yeah. Is the word I would use. Yeah.
And you know, if you think about adolescents moving to uni, big time.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Well, I thought about nobody needs weights, you hear?
Say again, Irene.
So nobody needs / weights, you hear?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And all to say, noticing where you are sharing protective beliefs with your client is a really great practice of self-awareness, because they're the beliefs that your client's going to rock up with, and you're going to go, shit, me too. I don't know what we do now. I'm in the hole with you, right? Let's both agree this is terrible. And of course, no good coaching can come from that, right? So just having that awareness, maybe even doing some self-coaching, some bringing it to your pod, like just sharing that to say, hey, can we work on this? I'm noticing this is coming up a lot. Take it to supervision. Get some support so that when you have a client who will inevitably, because you know, like attracts like, your clients are going to see something of you in them. This is why we often end up getting entangled with our clients, I'm pretty convinced. If you can do a little bit of work to support yourself so that it's not a surprise and you don't kind of go into that freeze state or try and avoid the whole thing and just move along quickly, or get into a place where you feel like, oh, I'm really screwing this up. I'm not helping my client because I don't know how we get through this. I'm in it with you, right? So it's a great thing to notice as you're going through this work. Where is this my story to? Where do I share something of this as well, right? And the one of the reasons to really talk about this is as we support our clients to move from uncovering a helpful belief and sometimes having a bit of a high from that, like, oh my goodness, I've got this much more helpful thing. I believe this thing. I want to take action from this belief. Resistance is inevitable in any kind of change we want to make. If you think of any change that you've made in your life, it's likely that it did not happen in a nice, smooth, easy, straight line. Right? If you're anything like me, there would have been tantrums, right? There would have been kind of, you know, off-brand thoughts and feelings, right? And usually it's kind of messy when we're making changes, right? So we want to be pretty comfortable with that messiness so that we can normalize it for our clients. That, you know, nothing's gone wrong. It's just something is giving us information. And we need to look at that so that we can move through it, right? So one of the things that I think we don't do very well as coaches is help our clients or feel like we can support our clients when everything is going wrong for them, right? When they're sort of like, I came to coaching, I had this goal, I took 3 steps and then something happened and it wasn't what I expected and that's it, I'm quitting, right? Coaching doesn't work, I'm not a good coachee, or my coach is crap, whatever. Like the stories that our clients will tell themselves because the process hasn't worked, right? And so what I want us to do is get better at saying, okay, so this will probably go to shit on day 3, right? And that's okay. Like nothing's gone wrong. And I want to take you through some of the usual ways that shows up so you feel kind of equipped to support your clients. What I would say is we're going to come back to this in our last module when we talk about goals and how to help our clients make plans and goals. We'll come back to resistance then as well. But I think it's helpful to touch on it now because as our clients are taking action from a new belief, this stuff will inevitably come up. So I just want to share with you, I'm just going to share my screen and I want to take you through a proper real experiment that I supported a client to make, to play with. About 18 months ago, this was a guy who was quite senior in his job, and then he got moved into a more creative role at his own, you know, behest. He was deeply excited about moving out of kind of managementy stuff and into a more creative role in quite a success-oriented IT company where, you know, lots of smart people in the room. And he found that he had a protective belief that said, my ideas are dumb, I'll be judged if I share them. So he was holding back. So he was, you know, kind of touted as this, you know, great win for the team. And then he rocks up and he's not sharing anything. And he's like, they know I'm not sharing. I know I'm not sharing. Ugh, something needs to shift. So this is the 4-step process that we went through to design an experiment that he could play with. So the first thing I want you to notice is that an experiment is purely to try something new to see what happens. The number one thing that your clients are going to try and experiment with is to try and control the outcome. So my client believed that the only way that he could measure if his idea wasn't dumb is if someone else validated it. Right? If my idea gets adopted and people think it's great, then I'll know it's not dumb. And this is not that, right? This is not where we're going. What we're doing is experimenting with trying new things to test the validity of the protective belief and the helpful belief. Okay. I want to take you through this a bit slow and then we'll have a bit of a chat about it. So clients believe, protective belief, my ideas are dumb, I'll be judged if I share them. Right. So we've already uncovered that. And we've also uncovered a more helpful belief. You know, it's safe to share my ideas. That was one that he was like, yep, okay, I can kind of see That is what my company keeps telling me. It's safe to share ideas. We want to fail fast. All of those great values that IT companies have. So these are some actions that we came up with, right? So we're just building on that first doable step from the helpful belief. We're building on that. What can we do to help the client to really play from that helpful belief? What else is possible? So here are some things. We had quite a big list, and I do recommend that you work with your client to come up with some stuff here. So keeping a notebook of his ideas, sharing an opinion with his loved ones. So he had this idea for his garden at home that he knew his partner was going to judge, and he was like, but that's a safe place for me to share my ideas and, you know, even have a little bit of a tussle around it. To share one idea with a trusted colleague, and to share his thoughts on other people's ideas, right? So to kind of build on them. So notice that all of these are relatively straightforward, quite simple actions he could take. This is where you want to be with your client. What you'll find is they won't take action if the actions are too big. You'll get resistance. You'll get procrastinating, and you'll get, you know, waiting till it's perfect, right? So the actions need to be doable, right? So you're just adding into that first doable step from the last part of the belief buster. We're just building on that, right? The client should go, yeah, I could do that. I can pretty much do that. And we're collecting the following data. This is usually going to be true for every single experiment. The data we're collecting is how does it feel for the client before, during, and after they act on that helpful belief. Right, that's the data we're trying to collect. That's going to tell us more about this whole thing than anything else. Right. And the point of this, the point of collecting that, is to find out if it is safe to share my ideas. Right. And some questions that he wanted to kind of explore around this. Does he like his ideas? Right. Can he get to know his own creative process? Can he explore how it actually feels before, during, and after he shared? Right. Notice that none of these measures are dependent on anyone else's opinion. Right. Because the last thing we want is to put an experiment, how the client feels about their own beliefs. We don't want to outsource that to anyone else. So for those of you who work with clients who own businesses, what you don't want to do is put the success criteria as I sell out my launch, right? Because actually that doesn't tell us anything about your beliefs. There could be 100 different reasons why that doesn't happen, right? So some top tips here. You've got the first box and the fourth box are your protective belief and your helpful belief. The actions are building on that, those doable steps, right? If they are too much for the protector, that's when the resistance will come up, right? So the way that you'll know your client is resisting is that they kind of don't tell you what they've done, right? Because they usually haven't done it. Or they will only do the actions that are a bit passive, right? So for example, you can see the difference, right? Between keeping a notebook of sharing my ideas and sharing my thoughts on other people's ideas. There's a different level of courage required for those, yeah? So if it's too much and the only thing they've done is kept a notebook of their ideas, then it's like, okay, that was the level you were, that your protector was willing to experiment with. That's great. What did you learn from that experience, right? We can still expand from that. And it may be that the experiment runs a little longer, right? So this is designed for sort of 2 weeks of in between a couple of sessions. If the actions are too big, you'll get resistance. There'll be any of those six P's of resistance will show up. And the client will usually have a lot of story around why it wasn't possible. Yeah. And so we're like, it's cool. It just sounds like the steps were too big. So let's either make them a bit smaller. Maybe we were both a bit ambitious about what felt possible in the session, but when it came to actually being, you know, in the hot seat with your clients, it was a bit too much, right? So it's just about kind of coming back a couple of steps. And the things we want to find out are, what does it mean if it's safe to share my ideas, right? What does that mean? What does that look like? How will I know that it's safe to share my ideas? You know, and these were some things that the client came up with, right? So the real, the thing to really notice is that resistance is highly likely to show up. So keeping experiments really small and doable, like almost to the point where the client's like poo-pooing it, is perfect. You want it to feel really easy for the client because we're just building in that competency, right? What my client found in this particular experiment was he found it much easier than he thought to share his thoughts on other people's ideas. And he found he really fell in love with the collaboration. That was like, oh, I can see that if I share on someone else's idea, if I've got a little idea for them, that makes it better. And that meant that when he was sharing his ideas, he was much more open to how great can we make this together, right? And that was a huge surprise to him. He was like, I never realized. I thought I had to have the perfect idea fully formed before I shared it, right? So that was the thing that made it safe for him to share his ideas, was that realization that would only have been possible if he'd been willing to sort of play around in this idea. Yeah. So you can see that your creativity and your offering of, hey, what if you did this? Or what if you tried this? When you're really lovingly detached from the actions that your client might take or might want to pick up, then that is where the magic really happens, right? And that's only possible if you're a bit unentangled from the whole thing, right? If you're like, oh, I've got no idea. Any action you take is making me feel really nervous, right? The client's going to smell that and it's like, oh, what is going on here? Okay, so I just want to stop there and just check in with folks. How is that feeling for you as a process, as a way to play with this with clients? Anyone want to share?
Yeah, it feels really good as a kind of natural next step after the you and here is your protective belief, rather than it kind of going, so what do I do now, that you can then design something teeny tiny that could help them then with the next step to use that knowledge and harness it.
Exactly that. And the helpful belief is just the first step. We can all believe helpful beliefs. Super. Right? But it's not going to actually create any change in the client's life until they start, you know, living from that place. And in lots of ways, the actions don't really matter. It's the belief. How do you get into that belief? How do you play from there? And what I've also found is that it can coexist with the more protective belief. Like, it's not a once and done. I found a new belief that I like better, that I know will support me. So I'm just not going to think the protective belief again. Actually, what's going to happen is they will probably overlap for quite a while until you get to a place where it's like, oh no, yeah, I can see believing my ideas are dumb and I'll be judged if I share them is a great way of never getting to a place where I'm sharing my ideas. But if I believe it's safe to share them, then something else becomes possible for me, right? It just feels better. And you can see that as you get more and more comfortable with that belief, then it's easier to take more and bigger action. And the protective belief starts to lose its hold. It no longer feels is true or is has much of a pull. Yeah, Vicky, carry on. And then I'll come to you, Tina. Yeah.
Tiny question. That table that you presented, obviously the final column was quite bespoke to him and the the scenario that he had. If that was to be like a sort of useful template that can be rolled out to anyone, what does that last box say in order to find out? And then you insert
it's testing the validity of the more helpful belief.
Yeah.
Right. So the question to ask your client is, how will I know that that your more helpful belief is true? How will we know that? You know, and I always position this as a kind of let's see. So it's either a question where you kind of, you know, do I like my ideas? I'll know if I'm liking them, then I'll know it's safer to share them, right? I'm getting to know my creative process. So it's, you know, it helps me to feel more comfortable.
Which I, when you say it like that, reminds me exactly of how I was trained as a coach, which is when you contract at the beginning, you say, and how will we know when we've got it?
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same here, but we're doing it with beliefs rather than goals and what we're doing during a session.
Yep. And importantly, it's coming from the client. It's their meaning making around how that belief will take shape in their lives. Just before we come to you, Tina, just one thing I just want to extend on that you've reminded me of, Vicky, is we talked a little bit this morning in the class about accountability and how, you know, it's very common, right, for us as coaches to get trained in how to hold our clients accountable. If there's one thing I can encourage you to totally forget, it's holding your clients accountable. There's a shit ton of research that shows that that does not actually work for most people. And anecdotally, I found that for folks with self-doubt, if they feel that pressure, it actually activates resistance because they don't want to let us down or let themselves down in a public way, i.e. in the coaching relationship, right? So the idea of accountability, I think for me, it's someone saying, I don't quite trust you to do this, so I'm going to hold you accountable. And that will be the thing. If you know you owe me this task, then you'll do it. But actually, it's not a motivator for most of us. Right? Oh, I love that, Vicky. Yeah. Just wrote an email to my list that says everyone says they want accountability, but that's not what they need or what helps. It really isn't. When you look at like human motivation, what motivates us the most is a connection to our values. So we'll talk about how to kind of pick up on that when we go into more self-beliefy stuff. Tina, I don't want to miss you. And then Adrian, I saw your hand come up. So we'll do full circle. Tina.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I wanted to say, because I was just contrasting traditional coaching, because they probably would have said, just get out there and share your ideas anyway. That'll be your, you know, in an unsafe way. I know you don't want to, but you just got to push through it. And then what probably would have happened, he would have been unsafe and he might not have shown up, or even like maybe his self-confidence would have gone down with this too. But that's just kind of the old way. This is just better because it's on his terms in a way that he's in control of, and you know, it's just better.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Is have you ever tried to do something that activates your self-doubt where you're just pushing through it?
Yeah.
Then it absolutely reinforces that crazy belief, no pain, no gain, right? Go hard or go home.
That's right.
Right. And it does feel hard because you do feel unsafe. Whereas if you have it built up to that, you know, if you've tried some experiments and, you know, found someone safe that you can share with and all of those kinds of things, when you do kind of have that sense of, I do think this is safe, you're also going to have a much better experience because you will not have your nervous system totally dysregulated and all over the place. You know?
And if it were easy for him to share, he wouldn't be there in coaching, you know, it's...
Yeah. And this is the thing, right? So many of us are not really schooled in what self-doubt even is or how to support our clients in it. So we naturally go, well, let's just be super brave today and just do the thing, right? And actually just doing the thing is probably going to exacerbate the very cause of the sense of unsafeness. Yeah. Love that, Tina. So cool. Yes, without that self-accountability, accountability from a coach becomes a power dynamic that the client is less than. Absolutely 100% right. Yeah. There's always a power dynamic at play, whether we talk about it or not, but being aware of that is super important. So yeah, it's like consent really matters, being client-led really matters, or we're there to do it. We're the little pinball patter things, whatever they're called, right? Just guiding the client. Yeah. Adrian.
Pretty much echoing everything that's been said already in this conversation, but I was thinking about the six P's and proving yourself being such a dynamic to watch out for between coach and client. I know that as a client in the past, I've had that activated where I'm like, oh, well, my coach wants me to do this thing and like, I'll do it because, and it doesn't feel good. And so to have that experience, I'm like, yes, it's something to definitely be mindful of. And I think it is often something that people socialized as women do to overcompensate for. So that's another dynamic to really watch out for if those are some of the folks that we're working with.
Completely. I really share that with you. And I think that's been where I've, I've got that conductor archetype. It's certainly been for me a way of trying to avoid, alleviate some way, you know, make sense of my own self-doubt is just keep proving myself. And I've often attracted clients who have that same dynamic. And I think that's one of the ways that you can start to play with this is when they're gathering that data, right? How did it feel before, during, and after? It's like, you know, I've had clients say, oh, I just had your voice in my head. And I was like, what was I saying though? Was it kind or was it like, come on, get on with it, you know? And so, yeah, it's like, it's a great thing to be able to even just surface that, is to say, well, you know, if there was that sense of beating myself up to actually do this task, it's like, what would you say to yourself now? You know, what might you do differently next time? So that data gathering is super helpful for starting to talk about what's going on around the process of actually taking the new action. Yeah, really good. Love that self-awareness too. Really cool. Yay. Oh my goodness. I love this, Vicky. Yeah. I just want a client who wants you to check in with them every day and she still didn't get herself done. Yeah. And it's because of how she was feeling about her thing. Yeah. What she was believing about it. I think this is the thing. And what I'm hoping you're starting to maybe grasp, right, is that it doesn't really matter what we do or don't do, it's what we believe about it that will shift things on a sustainable level in a way that is, you know, offers us some self-compassion, all of that. I'm experiencing this at the moment. Over the last 6 months, I'm really quite consciously changing my relationship with my body. I'm doing the same things I have done in 30-40 years of diet culture, right? But I believe completely different things about myself and it feels completely different as a result, right? So it's like, oh my God, this is just like one more damn lesson, right? Yeah, but it's that thing of it doesn't really matter what actions you take if what you're believing when you take those actions is I'm rubbish and everyone's going to judge me, or my ideas are dumb and I'll be judged, you know, I don't fit in, why aren't I further ahead than this, then you know, we kind of do something to our spirits when we, you know, talk to ourselves in that way, when it's our protectors that are leading. Yeah. Awesome. So what I really recommend is that you get kind of interested in your client's beliefs, your client's protective beliefs. What are they likely to be? you may want to start kind of keeping a bit of a record of that. It means that when you are marketing your single session offer, folks, get in quick, right? When you're doing this kind of stuff, when you're offering your work to the world, when you can say, oh, this might be you, right? You might be finding that you're holding yourself back because there's the sense that it's not safe to be visible, right? For example, if you work with business owners, you are actually saying to your client, I see you, like I see you and nothing's gone wrong and I can help, right? You're demonstrating that you understand your client and that you can help. I honestly believe like the number one job we have is to create some safety for our clients to be able to come in and poke around at all this stuff. So that happens from the first touch, right? And if the first touch is a post on Instagram or a newsletter that you send out or an email that, you know, gets sent on to someone via someone in your network, when the client goes, oh wow, okay, you kind of get me, that's when that sense of, oh, maybe there's hope, I need to follow this up, you know, that's the thing that we're after. So I really want you to get interested in your clients' beliefs, their protective beliefs, and to start to play with experimenting for yourself, right? So just notice, is there a belief that you share with your clients? How could you experiment with that, right? Again, the more you can kind of play with this stuff for yourself, the more you're speaking from it rather than theoretically, I am on the mountain sermonizing how to live your best life, right? It's much more like, hey, we're in this together. How can I help? You know, so it's just such a more safer and I think magnetizing energy to send out to the world. Adrian, your dog is beautiful. Oh, look at his little face. I'm sorry, dog person. So some ideas for how you can do this. Take on an experiment to create some new outcomes. If you don't have an experiment in mind, but you're a little bit tempted by a single session offer and you just want to see what that can look and feel like, that's a great experiment to take away, right? I'm going to play with offering a single session to the world and see what happens. But the key things you want to notice is what happens when you start to thicken those thin stories through some action, right? What happens to your resistance? How does it show up? How do you quit on yourself is a great question to contemplate, right? How does quitting work for you? You know, what happens for you? But also what new beliefs get created along the way as you try something new? Get support from the folks in your pod, see what comes up for you all. How's that feel? Good? Yeah? Anyone got any questions, shares, comments, ideas? Want to declare an experiment in public? What I'm hoping you can see is that for a client who's feeling like a bit stuck and a bit held back, that offering them a 90-minute session to say, let's uncover what the root cause of that belief is, find a more helpful one, and set you up with a plan to play with it is incredibly valuable, super valuable. And you know, just the whole idea, in 90 minutes, you could feel very differently about the situation. Doesn't matter how long it's been there, right? And you'll have a plan to take something forward and see what it's all about. So I think I said in my guide to single sessions, the way I did this was a 90-minute session where we do the body of the work and then a follow-up about a month later for 30 minutes just to see what kind of happened, you know, see what was all about. when I would offer those, and I just had like maybe half a dozen spots or whatever, almost everyone would sign up for coaching. It's a great way to start filling up a practice if you want to work more one-to-one people. Because it's like, it's such a lovely commitment, right? It's a very clear boundaried offer. But then for people who are like, oh my goodness, what else is possible for me? It's a no-brainer. And you get the opportunity to see if you're a good match for them. So I highly recommend it. Any other questions or comments or ideas around experimenting? Yeah, Angela.
So I'm picturing clients as myself. And so coming up with really simple actions, I tend to be an all or nothing thinker. And so that is often really hard for me. And so if this is meant to come from the client, and I'm sure I'll, you know, think of some ideas, but if I do have a client who's, I'll just launch my website in the next week, it'll be fine, I can do it. Or, you know, something just, you're like, that's not likely to happen. What's some language that you can use to not disempower them that doesn't feel like, I don't believe you can do that, but let's just choose something like something super small and easy that you know you can get done?
Great question. So what I would say to a client who said that is, talk me through that. What are the steps that need to happen from now until it's launched? And usually, let's work backwards. So you've launched. What happens before then, right? Like, and what they'll then see is there's maybe 56 steps, right? And so it's like, well, what feels, realistic? Or maybe just choose half a dozen that you can play with for the next week. So just, and remember and remind the client that the goal here isn't to get the task done or to achieve a success, some kind of success, it's to test the validity of the new helpful belief. The client's going to really want that, right? They're going to want to sell out their launch or publish their website or have a whole new way of being in their bodies or whatever it's going to be, a totally amazing creative process. All of that is incredibly valid. And it's like, and what can you do in 2 weeks? What are the steps towards that, and what's possible in 2 weeks? And it's like, okay, cool. So let's see what happens, because the purpose here is not that you launch the website. It's, can you become a person who believes that launching your website is inevitable? It's not just what we end up doing. Right, the behavior is interesting, but it's more, how are we doing it? Are we doing it in a way where it feels nice? We're nice to ourselves, you know, we're compassionate with ourselves. Failure doesn't feel like our world's collapsed. We just go, oh, that's a setback, bummer. Yeah. Does that help, Angela?
Yeah, that's, I think that last line you said of, it's not about launching the website, it's about becoming the person who believes that launching the website is inevitable. Yeah. Like that, yes, you're brilliant with words, and that was really great. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's cool. Brilliant. All right, lovely humans. Go forth, experiment, let your clients experiment. Imagine what that, I mean, I just always think about the energy it takes to make a sustainable change in our lives. This is non-trivial stuff, right? And to support your clients to do that, it's hugely valuable. It really is like the gateway drug, because once they've done one more thing, it's like, oh my God, who could I become? I'm no longer a procrastinator. I'm no longer a person who doesn't finish things, because I've got evidence that I just did finish something, you know? Yeah, what else is possible? Brilliant. Thank you all so much for your contributions and sharing and brilliant questions as always. Have a lovely couple of weeks off. Integrate, rest, enjoy. And we'll be back in a few weeks with module 6. I think that gets released tomorrow, so you will have that to play with. And it's all about getting to know the protector, and we're sort of taking this idea of the inner critic, the self-sabotaging inner critic. We're kind of blowing that idea out of the water and making it a bit more interesting. So I hope you enjoy that one, and we'll be back in a few weeks. All right, loves, take care. Angela, do you mind staying on just for a few minutes? And I'll just stop the recording.